The fight
for the future is now.
This is the War Room with Owen Schroyer at Infowars.com/show.
I agree with Senator Murphy. I mean, you want a ballistic missile deal with Iran. We got rid of the nuclear deal, which took years and years of pressure with international sanctions. We got a nuclear deal, and you say you want a ballistic missile deal. Well, they're not going to do a ballistic missile deal with you ever, as long as Saudi Arabia is spending like eight times as much as they do in the Gulf sheikdom surrounding them. It's a complete non-starter. So if that's our goal, it's sort of like saying we're no longer going to have any kind of diplomatic solution with Iran. With regard to Iran, Mr. Trachtenberg, do you believe the president has the authority to wage war with Iran without congressional authorization?
I believe that every nation has the right to self-defense, and that if attacked, the United States has the ability.
That's not the question. The question isn't on defending against an attack of sailors on a boat or people in an embassy. I think we all agree with that. We're talking about war. Let's say they attack one of our boats in there and we defend ourselves. We all agree we should defend ourselves. Can the president continue to a full-scale war with 120,000 troops? Can we have a full-scale waging of war with Iran without congressional authorization?
Only the Congress has the responsibility to declare war, has the authority to declare war.
Right. So the answer is the president can't do it, and that would be the explicit answer I would hope we would get from the policy person at the State Department. Ms. Thompson, the Aegis Ashore, is it essentially run by the same system as the Aegis Afloat?
So I'd actually defer the particulars with the Aegis, since it is a military piece of equipment, to my DOD counterpart. I can tell you that we've had discussions on the Aegis system with my Russian counterparts, but the ins and outs of the Aegis really isn't my...
Are they essentially run by the same system?
I believe the essential components are similar.
Okay. So this is also what Lockheed Martin says. They make it, and they say it's essentially the same system. We have also folks at the... I think it's the U.S. U.S. Naval Institute saying that basically Aegis Ashore could be easily turned into the offensive cruise missile system. And so I guess my problem is if you really are serious about talking to Russia, it isn't that we have to accept that they're telling the truth or that we agree with their points. But Ms. Thompson, when you say that their response that we're in violation is laughable and the world sees it as a fraud, it sounds to me like you're not really interested in negotiating with the Russians, because I think it's a debatable point. It's an arguable point. It has technical details. That's what nuclear arms negotiators and real diplomats are supposed to be discussing. So if it's essentially the same system and it got converted to a system of offense and we could launch cruise missiles from it, it sounds like the Russians have a point. And it sounds like it's at least a debatable point that we should be discussing before we say, oh, well, it's all the Russian side. That's not what diplomacy is about. Diplomacy is about figuring out what the other side is saying and not just saying they're a bunch of crazy, laughable people and we can't talk to them. That's the recipe for no diplomacy. And I think that's what you've set up in Iran, but it's also what you're setting up in Russia, is that we're not even willing to discuss whether the Aegis Ashore is similar to Aegis Afloat and whether they have an argument or not. I would think that's where we'd set down technical people at a table and have a discussion.
Is that a question? May I respond to that, Senator?
Well, I mean, the question is, you say it's laughable. Is that something a diplomat should be saying about something that is the main point Russia's bringing up? I'm not saying we accept it. I'm not saying it's true. But if that's their main complaint about us and our main complaint is SSC-8, we would hear each other's complaints, but we wouldn't say to the other side, we wouldn't say in public that their argument is laughable if we wanted to come to an agreement.
I can tell you, Senator, in my six engagements with my Russian counterpart since September, I have said that it is a professional discussion. I said that about the Deputy Foreign Minister, Sergei Grabkov, who I've met multiple times. We've met and had candid discussions. We've had technical experts meet. We just had... the BCC, and we've given readouts on that up about 2.5 weeks ago up to the Hill, where we have had the discussions, and they have raised the intelligence, and we have countered that intelligence with our technical experts.
My advice to you is I wouldn't say in public that your adversary's response is laughable. That really goes a long way towards setting back any kind of possible diplomatic solution. And this is important. We're talking about, you know, whether or not the world could be destroyed by nuclear weapons, whether we should limit the amount of nuclear weapons. When we say our adversary is laughable, you do a great injustice to the idea of diplomacy. So I hope you'll reconsider things you say in public.
you. Please. Thank you. Thank you very much. We're here on this very beautiful spring day in the Rose Garden to unveil our plan to create a fair, modern, and lawful system of immigration for the United States. And it's about time. If adopted, our plan will transform America's immigration system into the pride of our nation and the envy of the modern world. Our proposal builds upon our nation's rich history of immigration while strengthening the bonds of citizenship that bind us together as a national family. Throughout our history, we have proudly welcomed newcomers to our shores. Out of many people, from many places, we have forged one people and one nation under God, and we're very proud of it. We share the same home, we share the same destiny, and we pledge allegiance to the same great American flag. Our policies have turbocharged our economy. Now we must implement an immigration system that will allow our citizens to prosper for generations to come. Today we are presenting a clear contrast. Democrats are proposing open borders, lower wages, and frankly, lawless chaos. We are proposing an immigration plan that puts the jobs, wages, and safety of American workers first. Our proposal is pro-American, pro-immigrant, and pro-worker. It's just common sense. It will help all of our people, including millions of devoted immigrants, to achieve the American dream. We are grateful to be joined this afternoon by a tremendous number of people from the House, the Senate, and my cabinet. And I love you all, but I won't introduce you all because I'll be here all day long. But you're all here. Our plan achieves two critical goals. First, it stops illegal immigration and fully secures the border. And second, it establishes a new legal immigration system that protects American wages, promotes American values, and attracts the best and brightest from all around the world. The proposal begins with the most complete and effective border security package ever assembled by our country or any other country, for that matter. So important. This plan was not developed, I'm sorry to say, by politicians. We have a lot of politicians. But you respect the people and you know the people that have developed this plan. It was designed with significant input from our great law enforcement professionals to detail what they need to make our border, which is 100% operationally secure, 100%. Everyone agrees that the physical infrastructure on the border and the ports of entry is gravely underfunded and woefully inadequate. We scan only a small fraction of the vehicles, goods, and all of the other things coming across, including people. And sadly, the drugs pour across our border. We're going to stop it. Investment in technology will ensure we scan 100% of everything coming through, curbing the flow of drugs and contraband while speeding up legal trade and commerce. It's the most heavily traded monetarily border anywhere in the world, and it's not even close. To make certain that we are constantly making the upgrades we need, our proposal creates a permanent and self-sustaining border security trust fund. This will be financed by the fees and revenues generated at the border crossings itself. Importantly, we're already building the wall, and we should have close to 400 miles built by the end of next year, and probably even more than that. It's going up very rapidly. And I want to thank the Army Corps of Engineers for doing a fantastic job on the wall.
All right, welcome back to War Room. Obviously, I'm not Owen Schroyer. I'm Scott Bronson, and I'm filling in today for Owen. And I brought in Harrison Smith, and we're going to talk a little bit now. We got into a talk during the break room yesterday about one of the big things that I think is a big hindrance of what goes on in America now. I'd like to, personally, I think the separation of state and the federal is so minuscule, and the federal has become so overpowering that states are left to kind of just take whatever's given to them. And me and you started talking about it yesterday, and I thought it was a good talk, and then I was like, hey, we should go on and talk about it tomorrow. And so let's get into that a little bit.
Right, because that whole thing sort of dovetails into what I've been sticking on for a while, which is the 17th Amendment. People don't even realize that the 17th Amendment exists. It happened in 1913, which, of course, is like the big year where the Federal Reserve was started and income tax was created, and they did the 17th Amendment, and the Rockefeller Foundation was founded. I mean, all this stuff happened in this one year, and so maybe this one thing gets sort of passed over. But the 17th Amendment is what changed the way we elect senators. Senators were originally the state representatives in the federal government. They were there to represent the state, not to represent some sort of political faction throughout the country. It was supposed to be, you know, you sent senators from Texas to the United States government to represent Texas. And so the way that the senators were elected was by the state legislature. And that changed in 1913 with the 17th Amendment. It became a popular vote throughout the state. No longer were they appointed by the state legislature, but they were elected by the population at large. And so that's why you see things like with the 2018 senatorial election, with people like Beto O'Rourke or Stacey Abrams going from their home state where they're running, like Texas or Georgia, to California and New York to go to fundraisers. And you have people from those far-flung states just pouring millions of dollars into, you know, for all intents and purposes, foreign states in order to change the way that they vote.
Which I was going to say is now really kind of neutered the state, because now you have California dictating to Texas, a la Beto and other people that have run, who they want to see elected.
Right.
And as we all know, money kind of translates a lot to your votes. You have things like Facebook, YouTube, things like that you can put your ads out on. Twitter. I get Twitter ads all the time for various things, and it's very annoying for me, because I shouldn't have anything to do with Cory Booker running for New Jersey senator, but yet every time it's, hey, Cory Booker, I'm running for the New Jersey senator.
Yeah.
And it really is one of the points where it kind of takes away the power of the state. And I think it's one of the points where we started leading into the issues that we see now.
Right. Well, I mean, it literally took away the power of the states, because it took away the state's voice in the way that it took away their ability to appoint senators. But it really just makes it far, far easier to rig an election. If you can just pour millions of dollars into ads, into targeted ads, especially the way that they're able to break down demographics now, and can say, okay, if we just get everyone in this neighborhood to vote, and we just pour all this money into this neighborhood, we don't have to spread money all around and try to convince a bunch of people. We can just, you know, target, you know, demographically concentrated blocks that can guarantee our votes. And it's way easier to rig than it would be to rig all of the legislative votes throughout the state.
If only most of the richest people in the world were liberal, right?
Yeah, it's...
I mean, if you had extra millions just to throw wherever you wanted. We'll be right back. We will continue this talk in just a moment.
Infowars.com/show.
Hey,
back to the War Room. I'm Scott Bronson. I'm filling in for Owen Schroyer. Owen will be back tomorrow. And I'm here talking with my friend Harrison Smith. We're discussing a little bit between states' rights and the federal rights, and kind of getting an idea of what the originally founding fathers meant by this and what they were trying to obtain. Do you want to touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, there is the obvious and common misconception that we are a democracy, and we are not a democracy, folks. Breaking news from 250 years ago: we were never a democracy. We were never meant to be a democracy. And all of these movements towards more democratic rule, while it's sort of couched in the language of representation by the most amount of people, really, when you diffuse the power from sort of individual little blocks in the way that it was originally arranged, with power down to the smallest possible division. If you get rid of all those divisions and make it one big pool, it actually becomes far easier to manipulate. So, and we even see that now. I mean, this isn't a finished thing. This didn't end in 1913 with the 17th Amendment. Right now, we have the Electoral College being targeted, and people. Once again, it's couched in this language of, oh, we want to get the most amount of people, it's the most amount of people, so they deserve the power. But that's the opposite of what we want. The whole point of a republic, the whole point of the American system, is not to give all the power to the majority. It's actually to restrain the majority so the minority can have their own views. The minorities can express themselves. The minority can still have representation and not just be drowned out by the wail of the mob.
Yeah, and it just didn't start with the 17th Amendment. I think the 17th Amendment kind of showed them that this is the point in time where, hey, we can change this stuff around. We can do different things here. And it was really the 1960s is where the government started doing stuff where they would withhold money if you didn't follow the federal law. Mm. And you kind of saw a tug of war of sorts for the power of who controls what. And that is really where things started to unravel a bit, and you started seeing things, again, if the federal government, if a state relies on the Fed to give them money for something that the Fed has been giving them the whole time, all of a sudden now they're like, you have to do this,
right,
or you don't get this.
This is like the quintessential mechanism of power. It's the same reason why we don't have advertisers here at InfoWars. If you become reliant on a stream of money, then that person who's providing that stream of money has power over you and can threaten to or actually just withdraw it from you if you don't behave in their eyes. So it's the exact same thing that corporations do through advertisement to control media. It's the same thing that the federal government does through grants and that sort of thing to the states. So it's the same thing.
And I mean, the federal government is just too big to handle the things that they think they can handle. You're talking about some 330 million people,
mm-hmm.
50 states, whatever territories we have. You're talking about a thing where they're trying to control all of this. And what is good for California does not apply to Texas. There's no what's good for the goose is good for the gander. That's how diverse our country is. There's no one state where you can say this is the state that represents all states.
Right.
And when you take the power from the state, that limits what an Alabama can do, what California themselves can do.
Right.
And I'm personally a person that I see no reason why California can't be California.
Right.
I've said it all along. If California wants to say we don't want any guns, okay, that's fine. I think you're absolutely ridiculous in that, and I feel sorry for anybody that lives in California, and I'd recommend them to move.
Right.
But that's fine. Let them be California. You see it with things like with drug laws, Colorado. Mm-hmm. John Denver warned us about this with Rocky Mountain High. I mean, we knew this was coming, but you see how if they want to make marijuana legal and soon to mushrooms, magic mushrooms, then that's great. You can go ahead and do that. That's not my cup of tea, but if the people are voting for that in Colorado, sure.
Right.
But if the federal government all of a sudden steps in and says, hey, we're not going to give you this money because you do this, you can't force the whole country to abide by
Right.
I just don't think you should do that.
Well, and it's almost like a algebraic equation where it's like, you know, if nationalism is better than globalism, like naturally it follows that statehood is better than national. Like you want political power as diffused as possible and as in small enough groups as possible. So you decide what your neighborhood is going to be like. Your collection of neighborhoods decides what your city is going to be like. Your collection of cities decides what your state's going to be like. Your collection of states decides what your federal government's going to be like. Not the federal government decides what everything else is going to be like.
Well, when I moved down here from Minnesota, we bought a house with the Homeowners Association.
Right.
If my lawn gets too long, I get a nice little phone call.
Right.
Magically, there is zero lawns that are long in my right. neighborhood, and everything looks pretty nice. And I feel the same way that if you extrapolate that to the state level, like you were saying, nationally, I think we're okay. I actually think we're a lot closer on things than what the media tells us we are. I think there's some very common ground that we have. And I think you're actually seeing it with abortion, where I think I saw a poll where 55% people agree with what Alabama did. What it was like 31 agreed that it was just enough, and I think another like 24 came out and 24% and were like, this isn't enough, we got to go further.
Right.
So I think we're a lot closer than what the media wants us to be. You know, your CNNs, your Oliver Darcy's of the world, I think they need to have us at each other's throat, and I think that's all that they show, because it's the only thing that gets them any ratings.
Right.
And the people that don't dwell on that, take a Fox. We'll point at Fox, or even us. The people that aren't pointing at, well, the left did this, the left does that, the left does this, and they talk more about this is what's going on. Mm. Those are the people that are actually being tuned into. And I think that terrifies them. So they need to create that divide for the people that do look at that, right. and keep us at each other's throats. And if people would start looking around and realize, I don't go out every day in Texas and, you know, have people, you know, just hate me, you know.
Right.
And I don't go around Texas and look at people and be like, I hate that guy. I hate that guy. This is ridiculous.
Right. Well, the more you centralize power, we're in this sort of paradigm right now where the right and the left are both sort of just trying to create the create the landscape where they get the levers of power, where they see all the powers concentrated there. So it's just a battle over who can control that concentration of power. When in reality, what we need to be focusing on is the diffusion and destruction of that centralized power diffused out to the smaller states. So I think a lot of people on the right, it's just sort of the natural reaction of seeing all the consolidation of power under the liberal power structure, and they want to steal that power, but really that power needs to be broken up and destroyed and distributed throughout the states.
Well, and because the states have lost all their power, this leads me to one of my biggest fears. We are one election away from losing everything as conservatives that we love. We will be right back.
Infowars.com/show.
Decoding enemy transmissions
so you get the truth.
This is the War Room with Owen Schroyer.
All right, we are back on the War Room. It's Scott Bronson filling in for Owen Schroyer. I'm here with Harrison Smith. We're discussing the separation of states and the federal government and how that has been walked upon and just completely destroyed, and it really doesn't exist anymore. You no longer become a state senator, so that way you can help your state. You become a state senator because that's your easiest way to become president.
Right.
And the deterioration even goes up because, again, executive orders, never been a big fan of them. I'm not a big fan of them when Bush did them, when Obama did them. I'm not a fan of them when Trump does them. While I might agree with the ones that Trump does more and they might suit the goals that I want for the country. It doesn't mean I think it's necessarily the right way to go about it.
Well, and often what Trump does with his executive orders is just undoes or, you know, will undo what Obama previously did with an executive order. So it's kind of like, well, if you don't go through the process to get the law approved, if you don't go through the Congress and, you know, the prescribed process, if you shortcut that, well, don't be surprised that we shortcut it right back. You know, but if you were to have done it the right way, it would be much more difficult for us to undo it. So it's just it's an obvious consequence of abusing executive power.
Well, it's one of those things where if one man does it, that means one man can undo it.
Right.
If many men do it, it takes many men to undo it.
Right.
And that's really where we're at now.
Yeah. Well, and we talked a little bit about the Electoral College and how they're trying to destroy that now. And I mean, these people are wizards or something, because I don't know how they've convinced, for example, the people of Colorado. So the way that the Electoral College is being destroyed now, in case you aren't aware, is that states are individually voting to say we will give our electoral votes over to the popular vote winner throughout the country. And in order to do that, they have to get a certain quorum of states to all vote for this certain thing. But I don't know if they realize this, but when Colorado voted in favor of that, when they said we will give our electoral votes over to whoever the popular vote is, somehow they got the people of Colorado to essentially vote to no longer have a say in the presidential election. That is the consequence of not having an electoral college, is you are literally, the people of Colorado are literally saying we no longer want to vote in the presidential election because the population of New York City is like far bigger than the population of all of Colorado.
Well, so I believe there's, five cities that you have to win? It's something like five cities that you have to win in order to get the popular vote. Did we ever find that? Not yet? Okay. But there's, I mean, you win L.A., you win New York, you win, Philadelphia, you get probably Houston.
And Chicago, yeah.
And probably Chicago. If you win those five, you're almost guaranteed to win the popular vote. And the popular vote doesn't matter. If we have all these centers of population, again, California does not get to dictate to Texas what Texas has to be. Texas does not dictate to Minnesota what Minnesota has to be. Montana gets to be Montana. That's the way this all works. That's what this is set up to do.
It's literally before we were a country. The Declaration of Independence, the whole point of it was we don't have to be under a governmental system in which we don't have a say and that doesn't represent us. Like that is the whole point of America, ladies and gentlemen. So if you were to create the popular vote throughout the whole country and that's who decides the president, then people in Colorado or people in California and New York are deciding the president for the rest of us. The rest of us are no longer represented by the federal government. We no longer have any reason or purpose for being loyal to that federal government because we don't have a say in it, and they just impose stuff on us rather than actually representing our interests. So why would we not break away at that point?
And if that doesn't scare you as an American citizen, if something like that doesn't scare you where somebody gets to dictate to you, being dictated and told what you have to do, that's the exact opposite of freedom. That's a whole different thing.
Right.
You're going into a whole different ball game. And I think it's not just Colorado. I think there's like 13 other states that have signed on to this BS of let's just go by the popular vote. And it's small states too. I believe Vermont was the most recent one. If Vermont doesn't have the Electoral College, Vermont doesn't even matter.
Right. No, they're literally voting to no longer have a vote. I mean, it's as simple as that. If people in Colorado, if more states were to sign on to this, they could just stay home on election day or go to the polls. Either way, it doesn't matter because every one of their votes is undone by a vote from New York City or California. So literally, I mean, if you're in Colorado, you need to get involved in your state politics and tell people if we go over to a popular vote system throughout the whole country, we are literally giving up the idea that Colorado would have a say in who should be president. Just stay home. Just stay home on election day. Your vote literally doesn't matter.
So how do we combat something like this? Because again, when you take voices like Alex Jones, your Laura Loomer, McGinnis, I imagine soon it will be Crowder and things like that. When you start pulling these things off of it, you're not getting the varying viewpoint. I'm sure PragerU is another one that will eventually be eliminated and taken off. But when you take those voices off, there's no alternative viewpoint, and then we all become the NPC or just sheep, basically. How do we combat, like, what do we do to combat this as far as getting people to realize why the Electoral College is there and why the separation of state and Fed is so necessary?
Well, it's just yet another reason why we need more diffusion of power and why the idea of collective across-the-board democracy is so easy to manipulate and sway, because if all of our conversations are going on at the national level and the national level conversation is utterly controlled by a small clique of people or a small group of people that excludes people that think differently from them, then it's very easy to sway the vast swath of American population. If it's diffused down to smaller incremental parts, then your voice has much more of an impact. The policies that are being enacted have much more of an impact on you. You have much more impact on the political system. And these national voices matter much less than just the local voices between neighbors of mayors and county judges and this sort of thing. If those were the people, if the power worked its way up like it should in a republic, all these little issues could be much more easily handled in a local way rather than grouping them all together into the national conversation, then controlling the national conversation. If you diffuse that out, it's way harder for, these media giants. And again, the 17th Amendment is just the best example, because imagine how hard it is, or how hard it would be. Imagine you're trying to rig an election. Imagine you're George Soros, you're trying to rig an election. You have, a senator that you're trying to get elected. How much easier is it if you can just blanket the whole population of the state and just get everybody out to vote on this one day for this one guy? That's an easy thing to do. If, on the other hand, you have to try to control the legislature of that state, you have 50 states, you're trying to control the legislature of all of those, and each one of those has hundreds of people in the legislature, suddenly you're having to somehow manipulate or control or get your person elected in, however 300 different counties in Texas or whatever it is. That's an impossible task. You cannot rig 300 local elections. It's very easy to rig one statewide election. So that's how we combat it, is we diffuse the power out to the states, not just try to grab the levers of power in the center, which is the tactic that's being taken on both sides now.
Yeah, and get a senator elected. I mean, I'm sure Soros has gotten many senators elected if we had any sort of clarity on how the financing goes into it. And for those out there who don't, I assume our listeners do, but if they don't think that the censorship really matters, look at who they're targeting now. They've done it enough with enough people that Elizabeth Warren feels comfortable declaring that Fox News is right. is only perpetrates hate. That means Fox has become their new target,
right?
The most ratings, the largest rating news network out there.
By far, yeah.
So if that's their new target, that means we are way behind on this battle.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
All right, we will be right back.
The War Room. Infowars.com/show.
Just filling in for Owen Troyer. Harrison Smith was kind enough to come in and join me for the first hour, teach a guy off the street how to do this hosting thing a little bit. And
it's all about confidence. You want to project confidence.
Oof, we're in trouble, people. during the break, you were telling me a little bit about a story that you were looking at.
This is a great story. At least the way that this headline puts it is such sort of a simple and easy way to frame this question. It's a story from the Metro UK, and the headline is, "Gene editing, will it make rich people genetically superior?" The answer is yes, of course it will. That's and this is one of the myriad of problems with this idea of editing DNA of living or embryonic human beings.
And anybody that doubts that, take a look at how aging affects the rich people versus aging affects the average person. If I'm rich and I get to go work out every day and I get to go get the
eat healthy,
get any sort of injection that I need to get rid of a wrinkle or anything like that, it becomes really easy to stay young looking.
Right. But you know, and that is an obvious sort of way that it's played out here and now. But if you take it to gene editing, it's like that's a whole nother step, and it becomes an obvious compounding feedback loop where those who are able to afford, especially on the forefront of gene editing, are able to afford these types of biological enhancements to themselves. They become smarter, more cleverer, more able than the people that aren't able to afford this. So naturally, they're going to be a little bit better at them that whatever job that they're going to have. So they're going to get richer. So they're going to be able to afford more gene editing. So they're going to be even better than that. So, but what the gene editing is introducing is a stratification of the population in exactly the way that Brave New World laid it out, where you're going to have the epsilons and the alphas. You're going to have the different stratas of human beings, where you have the highest strata are literally inhumanly smart, inhumanly intelligent, inhumanly strong, whatever it is. And the people underneath are either totally unedited, right? They're natural. They're the weak, stupid humans, or they're actually going to edit the genes in the opposite way and say, well, you know, you need to be edited in a way so you're happy with being the lowest strata.
Well, you need to be my farmer.
Right.
I can't have you have come up with ideas. I need you to be the farmer that just goes out and takes care of the stuff for me. I need you to be my factory worker. I need – and again, for – think about how special an athlete somebody like LeBron James is.
Right.
Do you think that LeBron James would be special if all of a sudden everybody could just be LeBron James? And even more, like if LeBron is special now, what happens when a guy can jump 50 inches?
Right.
You know, you lose. I mean, you get into a thing like the trans men or trans women going into women's competitions. You're going to lose the spirit of anything.
Right.
And
no, that's exactly right. So it's not going to be about, you know, OK, this person is the best because they trained the best, because they overcame the human limitations and. You know, made something better of themselves. It'll be no, they could afford the genetic enhancements that granted them this ability without any work or trying at all.
This person is the best because there's something special about them. You eliminate everything special about humanity if you can genetically engineer the exact person that you want.
Right.
And humanity is, I would argue, the greatest thing on earth.
Right, and that's what's being destroyed and targeted right now. But these are two stories from this week. The first one I just read, gene editing, will it make rich people genetically superior? Yes. And then, of course, we can extrapolate that or go a little bit farther down the line and say immortality. Will it make rich people live forever? You know, at a certain point, we are going to achieve functional immortality where we'll either be able to transfer our brain to a new body or we'll be able to just indefinitely postpone the aging process. I mean, there are billionaires that are already saying that they'll never die because they think it'll happen in their lifetime. But whenever it happens, that creates an unsustainable pattern of growth within the human population. If everybody were to be immortal, so then you have to consolidate who can be immortal and who can't, and you gift the immortality to the mortals who show that they're able to play by their wills. But hold on. So that's the first one. Will rich people be genetically superior? But here's the other one that came out this week. German Ethics Council expresses openness to eventual embryo editing. But it's not just openness. This was a panel of government-appointed experts in Germany who agreed unanimously that the human germline, that's what they call the DNA you've inherited from your parents, your germline, by the way, DNA that's inherited by children from their parents, is not inviolable. So you can violate it. You can destroy it. They're rejecting one objection to using genome editing technology such as CRISPR to make heritable changes of the DNA to human embryos, sperm, or egg. So to me, the embryo thing is the most important, and this goes hand in hand with the pro-life argument. If you say that embryo or that fetus in the woman is a human being. It therefore has rights. It therefore you aren't allowed just to go in and manipulate it, because you can't come manipulate my DNA. You can't come do that without my permission. And so if you believe that child in that uterus is a human being and has rights, then you can't mess with it. You can't go in and change its DNA. However, if it's just a clump of cells, if it's just, you know, a parasite or a cancer or a tumor, then yeah, go ahead and manipulate the DNA, because you're just going to destroy it later, and you can do all sorts of little tests and stuff. So, I mean, to me, this goes hand in hand with the pro-life argument as well. But this is where we are. This week, German Ethics Council says, yeah, embryonic gene manipulation is fine, and we aren't even considering the fact that this means that we're going to create a class of superhumans. We aren't even thinking about that.
This shows that we don't pay attention to anything that's happened in the past, because if we're turning to German ethics,
right?
I believe there's a war that happened that kind of showed us that they might not be right all the time.
This is literally the expansion of eugenics in a way that is it's almost like positive eugenics rather than negative eugenics, right? Eugenics back in the day were, oh, if you have bad genes, we're going to castrate you and not allow you to breed, not allow you to continue your genes. Now it's the opposite. We're going to find people with bad genes and change them to be good. It's creepy.
It even goes further than that, because if, like you were saying, it ties into the abortion thing. It also ties into how they push for vaccines and stuff. What would be the easiest way to engineer somebody's genes than if you could inject them with something that would – I mean, this is where my mind goes on stuff like this. I'm very skeptical when I have people – telling me what I have to do and what it's right for you to do this.
Well, and you also just have to think about what the psychological effects of this would be. Right now, if you're born and you have, I had a big mole on my face when I was a kid, or you're born with some sort of deformity on you. Well, that's God. That's genes. That's just the genetic expression of your genetic line, and that's the reality, and you have to deal with it, and you sort of just accept it, and you know that was just a coincidence of the universe. What is your mindset when you know that your physicality or even your mentality is not your own? It's not a natural consequence of God or your parents' genetic expression, but was actually predetermined by some other human. Your own genetic makeup, your own physicality and mentality is not yours and is not a product of God. It is a product of another human's manipulation. And then, is it, well, I feel this way because some doctor programmed me to be this way. Do you even feel like you have a real soul at that point? Do you go, oh, why didn't they change me in even more ways? I mean, what is the consequence of having a child who grows up knowing that his DNA, his very self was predetermined by a human and not by God? It's a break of humanity.
Well, it's what they need to get away from. If you have a belief in God, or you know God, if you have that belief, you will never turn to these things. You just can't do it, because you'll believe that I was made in this way. And you know, this is the stuff that we're fighting against here. This is why we need people to go to InfoWarsStore.com and buy a shirt, buy a product, buy a Turbo Force or the DNA Force or any of that stuff, because that shows us that we're in the right. It's been the people that listen to these shows for the last 20 years. Alex has been funded by his listeners,
we've been talking about stuff like this, and we've been warning that this is coming, and now it's here. And we're still the only ones talking about it. It's still just sort of a back page story on the, you know, beneath everything else. This is humanity being destroyed, and we're still the only ones talking about it.
Exactly. InfoWarsStore.com. Please buy a product, buy a shirt. The shirts are fantastic. I love them. Just please support us. We'll be right back.
Infowars.com/show.
The fight
for the future is now.
This is the War Room with Owen Troyer at Infowars.com/show.
Well, some things that I would like to change, one is the Electoral College. The Electoral College needs to go.
And maybe we might want to take a look at the whole Electoral College.
I think it needs to be eliminated. I'd like to see us move beyond it, yes.
And that means get rid of the Electoral College.
I want to talk to you about the Electoral College and why it matters. All right, I know this doesn't sound like the most sensational topic of the day, but stay with me because I promise you it's one of the most important. To explain why requires a very brief civics review. The President and Vice President of the United States are not chosen by a nationwide popular vote of the American people. Rather, they are chosen by 538 electors. This process is spelled out in the United States Constitution. Why didn't the founders just make it easy and let the presidential candidate with the most votes claim victory? Why did they create, and why do we continue to need, this Electoral College? The answer is critical to understanding not only the Electoral College, but also America. The founders had no intention of creating a pure majority rule democracy. They knew from careful study of history what most have forgotten today or never learned. Pure democracies do not work. They implode. Democracy has been colorfully described as two wolves and a lamb voting on what's for dinner. In a pure democracy, bare majorities can easily tyrannize the rest of a country. The founders wanted to avoid this at all costs. This is why we have three branches of government: executive, legislative, and judicial. It's why each state has two senators, no matter what its population, but also different numbers of representatives based entirely on population. It's why it takes a supermajority in Congress and three-quarters of the states to change the Constitution. And it's why we have the Electoral College. Here's how the Electoral College works. The presidential election happens in two phases. The first phase is purely democratic. We hold 51 popular elections every presidential election year, one in each state and one in D.C., On election day in 2012, you may have thought you were voting for Barack Obama or Mitt Romney, but you were really voting for a slate of presidential electors. In Rhode Island, for example, if you voted for Barack Obama, you voted for the state's four Democratic electors. If you voted for Mitt Romney, you were really voting for the state's four Republican electors. Part two of the election is held in December, and it is this December election among the state's 538 electors, not the November election, which officially determines the identity of the next president. At least 270 votes are needed to win. Why is this so important? Because the system encourages coalition building and national campaigning. In order to win, a candidate must have the support of many different types of voters from various parts of the country. Winning only the South or the Midwest is not good enough. You cannot win 270 electoral votes if only one part of the country is supporting you. But if winning were only about getting the most votes, a candidate might concentrate all of his efforts in the biggest cities or the biggest states. Why would that candidate care about what people in West Virginia or Iowa or Montana think? But you might ask, isn't the election really only about the so-called swing states? Actually, no. If nothing else, safe and swing states are constantly changing. California voted safely Republican as recently as 1988. Texas used to vote Democrat. Neither New Hampshire nor Virginia used to be swing states. Most people think that George W. Bush won the 2000 election because of Florida. Well, sort of, but he really won the election because he managed to flip one state which the Democrats thought was safe, West Virginia. Its four electoral votes turned out to be decisive. No political party can ignore any state for too long without suffering the consequences. Every state, and therefore every voter in every state, is important. The Electoral College also makes it harder to steal elections.
Right back on the War Room. Again, it's Scott Bronson. We'll see you on the other side of the break. Well, Welcome back to the War Room. This is Scott Bronson filling in for Owen Schroyer. He will be back tomorrow, and you'll get the same Owen flair as you normally do. I enjoy it. I watch it every day. He'll be back tomorrow. Now I kind of want to go into, you know, last hour I was talking with Harrison about the separation of states and the federal government and how important that is. And now I want to go into kind of the stuff that the Democrats run on that they don't even believe in themselves, because you know they don't believe in it themselves because they don't actually put the stuff that they want into the states that they run. One of the big ones for me is that you always hear a Bernie Sanders or all of them run on everybody has to have a universal health care. We need a universal health care. Everybody, it's a human right to have health care. That's great. If you believe that, why don't the states like California or New York, why aren't they putting that into their state? If it's such a great idea, why aren't they doing it? If gun control is such a fantastic thing and it needs to be reformed and nobody should have guns, why aren't Baltimore, Chicago, and Washington, D.C. the three safest cities in the world? They have very strict gun control. They have a very, very they have the stuff that they say they want. But why aren't those cities safe? Why is the gun violence still there? If you extrapolate that to the rest of the country, how is that ever going to work? It doesn't even work in the places that they want. Let's take a look at healthcare, universal healthcare. They always like to point to Canada. Canada is a state that has, or a state, yeah, a country that has 37 million people in it. They have a GDP of 1.6 trillion. I believe we have a graphic for that if you guys want to throw it up. And then, so 1.6 trillion is their GDP. If we go to California, they have a 39 million population and a 2.7 trillion. GDP. That's $1.1 trillion more dollars than what Canada has. And if you go to New York is always a big one where they always push for it. 19.5 million people, $1.2 trillion GDP. And the thing with Canada's numbers, they at least have to pay for military, they have to pay for other things beside that the federal government for us takes care of, but somehow Canada can have the thing that they want, but California and New York can't. If it's such a great idea and it's such a fantastic thought, how come they don't get that stuff there? What's the holdup for them? It's because they don't actually believe in it. It's just like the Affordable Care Act. What they need the people to do, why the Affordable Care Act even came close to working for them, is because it required somebody that was healthy to have health insurance. And then if he didn't have health insurance, he would then have to pay a fine for it. So he'd have to pay in for something that he didn't have. They don't want to give you health care. They want your money, because if your health care and everything like that gets thrown into a big pile of cash for them, it's going to be just like Social Security and all the other programs that the government controls. That money's going to go to other things because, well, we can't just have money sitting there. And you'll never see the government actually get rid of a program. You'll never see the government actually say, you know what? Maybe welfare is a little bit overinflated. Maybe we should check this out and maybe cut some of this stuff off. Maybe they don't need this much. Maybe we should put more money into helping people find a job or helping people get off welfare. But they don't do that, because the second that they get people off welfare, the money goes away from welfare. And then they don't. Then they have an issue. Now we don't have the money that we want. You had the You have the Pentagon that has just millions of dollars or billions of dollars just go missing, trillions of dollars. You had Hillary Clinton's state-run department whose budget that she just didn't have. She can't tell you where this money went. How is that possible? If they do health care, aren't they going to do the same thing? I bet if you audited Medicare, you would find that, oh, wow, there's a lot of waste here. These people do not actually believe what they preach. And again, you know this because they don't pay the people that work for them on their campaigns the minimum wage that they say that everybody should have. A minimum wage that is there to help people who get a job so you can't take advantage of a young kid who tries to get a job at McDonald's or an old person that needs to get a job at McDonald's. Those jobs are there to give people some protections. You're not supposed to live off of a job at McDonald's. It doesn't work like that. I had a job at Burger King when I was 13 years old. Was I ever going to be able to live off of anything I made at the age of 13? Not a chance. And they just completely disregard the stuff that they try and force on you. It's to force, they want you to pay for things that won't actually help you. The VA is not the best place to go get health care. If it was, why would we hear stories about people not being given the treatment that they needed? Why, if it was such a great thing, my mom works for the VA. Why does my mom say that they have so much turnover and things are so bad there that she cries about it? I mean, open your eyes. They're trying to lead you into something to where the liberals actually believe that you don't know what's best for your money. They think that you have to give them your money. I've always said it ever since I was a young kid. There's one side that thinks, hey, we need to set this up so people can help themselves. And then there's the other side that says, hey, these people can't do anything. We better do it for them. Teach someone to fish, they eat for a lifetime. Give someone a fish, they eat for a day. And somehow it's the side that wants to teach people, that wants to allow people to better themselves and pick themselves up and actually build something and have some pride in what they do. These people are somehow dubbed as the people that are wrong. They don't care. I'm not saying I'm not willing to help somebody. I'm not saying that I don't want people to be helped. But I'm saying that the time of just taking my money and doing with it what you want, that should end. That should end very soon. We're so far in debt on the federal level that a lot of things should end. You want to talk about, you know, I said earlier to Harrison that I think we're a lot closer on things than what we realize. Well, the easiest way to have everything go completely upside down would be to have the national debt actually become something that affects everybody's life. I don't know what the debt clock is right now, but last I saw, I magically owed a lot of money. My 12-year-old son magically owes a lot of money. In 12 years, he's racked up more debt than I have in a lifetime. Let's figure that out. But they don't care. Again, you saw the numbers. California and New York make as much or more than Canada. And somehow Canada has the healthcare system that these people point to. If they actually cared about it, why wouldn't they have it? Why wouldn't they get it in the States? Why wouldn't they have something to show to the rest of America that, hey, this is what we have here. It works really well. I know Minnesota actually has a healthcare program that works pretty well. Every kid under the age of 18 is covered by Minnesota Care. It works pretty well. But they don't institute that anywhere else. We'll be right back.
War Room. InfoWars.com/show.
Welcome back to The War Room. I'm Scott Bronson, and we were talking about how the Democrats don't actually believe in what they're selling. They're selling you a false bill of goods, and we know they don't believe it because the stuff that they're selling doesn't actually work where they control. Last segment I was pointing out that if they really wanted health care, universal health care for everyone, why wouldn't California and New York already have it? They make more money and have less people than Canada, and they don't have the obligation of paying for a military. They don't have the obligation of paying for a lot of the stuff that a federal government would have to pay for, that our federal government does pay for. And both these states tax their citizens beyond belief. I would argue that you could probably – I'm not sure about this, but I'm guessing that they both probably have the highest tax rates in America. Maybe Hawaii would be higher, but that's another one that's – you know, why don't they do this stuff in Hawaii? That would give them a segregated island to figure out what they're doing. Now I kind of want to go into – I touched on it a little bit, but I want to go into the gun control that they keep selling everybody. They tell you that, well, we need to have more background checks. We need to have tougher regulations. And this is just – it's just common sense that we have to do this. It's common sense that these are the things that we need for this. And they always say, well, we can compromise on something. But to that I always say, when we compromise on gun control, what have we ever gotten back? Have they ever said, you know, hey, you give us this these comprehensive background checks and we'll put these guns back on the market? No, it's always we got to have harder. It's got to be harder for you to get a gun, and there's less guns that you can get. So there's never a compromise there. It's it'd be like trying to compromise on abortion or something like that. Oh, hey, you know what? You're right. We shouldn't just kill every baby. And you know, that's wrong. So what we'll do is we'll just maim them. I mean, come on. There's no compromise in that. So, and it's the same with gun control. They want you to compromise on something that you shouldn't compromise on. We get nothing back. We have never been, I cannot remember a time where we talked gun control and it involved a thing to where, oh, hey, let's make it more, we'll do this and then we'll give you this back. It just does not happen. And again, all the things that they're selling, they don't make sense. You see the homicide rates in places like St. Louis, Chicago, Baltimore, Detroit, Philadelphia. All these places, they do not – it does not lead to the results that they're trying to sell you that they lead to. And if you looked at history at all and took a look at it, you would see that it doesn't translate to that. The only thing that translates to – for what they want to do – and again, you can check out places like Venezuela and stuff like that. Everything that they want to push for, it leads to the stuff to the confiscation of your guns, to taking your rights away. These are actual rights for the Bernies and the Kamalas of the world that think abortion is a constitutional right or that health care is somehow a constitutional right. These are the things, gun control or guns were actually a right given to us, along with things like free speech. We were given the right to bear arms. It doesn't say you can bear arms, but let's keep it single shot rifles here, people. It doesn't say that. It says you have the right to bear arms. There's times in history where people had asked presidents, "Hey, can I have this gun on my ship? Can I have this gun because I have to go into this area that isn't safe?"
Can I have this, you know, can I take this to these places? And the president would write back and say, yeah, there's a Second Amendment. Go ahead, you can have that. Now we have things like an AR-15, which if you ask, I'm guessing if you ask most liberals, they probably think it means assault rifle 15. Well, that's not true, and we know that's not true. They've created a whole class of guns that belong in Call of Duty. They're not, assault rifles aren't a real thing. They're rifles. And so they push for this. But again, look at the stats. Look at the different stats of the homicide rates and stuff like that. Most of your places where the Dems have actually instituted their gun control that they want, you have a blatant disregard of an effect of the thing that they passed. I mean, you got St. Louis up here with 66.1 murders out of every 100,000 people that they have. Chicago, 24 people get murdered out of 100,000 people. Baltimore, 55.8 people out of every 100,000 people. And like Derek just said to me, every major city in Ohio is on this list. I don't know what the gun control laws are like in Ohio, though, so I can't make a comment on that. But it's just one of those things that they're, again, it's a false promise that they're selling you. You take away guns, you don't become safer. It's more dangerous not to have a gun than it is to have a gun. That's a blatant fact. And if you don't believe it, look at, I think, less than 7 years ago, Venezuela was taken, their guns were taken away. And it made a law that they can't have them. 3 weeks ago, we saw the Venezuelan government running over protesters. These are all things that are, that if you just look at it and just study anything, pick something that you want to study and look at it. You'll see that they're selling a false bill of goods. And you know, Cory Booker, he wanted to have a everybody has to get a license with the gun. If they want a gun, you have to get a license. Well, that's just a roundabout way to confiscate the guns. Registration leads to confiscation. Always has, always will. There's not a time where they've registered guns and it didn't lead to confiscation. Maybe Switzerland, because everybody is given a gun at birth. I don't know. But if you look at all the dictatorships and all the totalitarian governments out there, they took the guns from their people first, and then they started doing what they want. And for every liberal that tells you that that's a good idea, they're the ones that are telling us that our government is the most tyrannical thing out there. They're trying to tell you that our government is the most tyrannical government out there. Everything is wrong with it. Everything that we've ever done in our history doesn't matter. But, oh yeah, you got to give us your guns, too. It's a false bill of goods. It's not anything that can ever work. It's not anything that we should allow as people. We'll be right back.
Infowars.com/show.
Donald J. Trump, the President of the United States.
Trigger warning. This broadcast contains subject matter that might trigger liberal snowflakes. It's the War Room with Owen Schroyer.
Welcome back to the War Room. I'm Scott Bronson, filling in for Owen Schroyer. Owen's going to be back again tomorrow. We've been talking about the
various things that this hour, the various things that the Democrats try and sell you that actually don't, they don't actually believe in. They don't actually, they either don't believe in it or when they try and put it in, it doesn't work. And they know it. And they know it. But it's an easy way to get people to vote. And like we talked with Harrison in hour one, you only have to win five cities to get the popular vote, and they keep trying to attack the Electoral College. And so these things become these are the vehicles that they're going to use in order to fix every election for them in their favor. I believe that Benjamin Franklin once said that, you know, if you allow people, I'm paraphrasing here completely, but if you allow people to vote themselves money, the republic will be lost. It's something along those lines. And again, I probably butchered the quote because I don't, you know, I don't have the mind of an Alex Jones that things like that lock in my head. So those are the things, but these are the vehicles that they're trying to use that they don't actually believe in. And if they did, why would Bernie be one of the people that when they put the Affordable Care Act in place, why would Bernie and all these other people that wanted these healthcare things and said they were so great, why would they exempt themselves from it? It doesn't seem like you would do that. If it's a great deal, why wouldn't I want it? So now we're going to talk about the other thing that they like to get into. Climate change, or their grand way of shifting all the money in the world around. And for this, the vehicle that they're going to use is the Green New Deal. The Green New Deal is going to cost about $92 trillion was the number that I saw. $92 trillion for the Green New Deal, which will be, you know, a lot of fantastic ideas in here. Like, you know, if you don't want to work, you don't have to work. You should just get something anyways. We actually got the one before she took it off of her site here. So we can see what it did say. It's a bunch of hogwash. If you look at the 100 most polluted cities in the world, not a single U.S. city is on there. Not one. If you look at the 10 most, I'm guessing it's all probably India and India and China were the two big ones that I saw on the list I was looking at. There's not a single U.S. city on there. So why would we be the ones that you target for the Green New Deal? Well, we have the most money. And obviously, the rest of the world's pollution is somehow our fault because, once again, the Democrats feel that America is the worst country in the history of countries, and it needs to be stopped. You know, it's a tyrannical government, so give us your guns. So you look at it, $92 trillion to get everything for this for the Green New Deal. The only problem with $92 trillion is I believe that is solely for the United States to follow the Green New Deal. There's only $80 trillion in the world. $80 trillion is the amount of money that's in the world. It's a little bit, they figure it's a little bit in excess of $80 trillion. That means just to fix the United States, they need to take all the money from the world and then, oh yeah, we're going to need more money next year. Or, you know, the next $12 trillion that you guys make, that's just free labor there. It's like everything they try and sell you. It's all ridiculous. It's all crazy. And, you know, like I said, in here, she talks about that everybody needs an affordable, adequate housing, an economic environment free of monopolies, economic security to all who are unable or unwilling to work. This was the original one that she put up. She had to take it down now because, well, she was only joking about it. It's like the 12 years thing. The Earth only has 12 more years. Okay. She spouted that for months. And then the second that she got drawback on it, she put out videos where she did, not just the one video where she said it. She put out another, the cartoon one where she said it in that one. Beto's spouted off the 12-year thing. They all spout off these things, and they all do it while living in one of the cleanest countries in the world.
one of the only countries in the world that land is actually valuable and reserved as national parks. You have anywhere from a desert to snow to mountaintops here. You have any sort of thing that you would want to see in America. And they think that we're the problem for the world. And they want you to give your money to them. Again, it's all about you giving something to them. They're taking something from you. It's not about, hey, let's work on the world and maybe we should stop using aerosol cans. Okay. When I was a kid, I was told that there was a hole in the ozone that would never close. It never closed and it was caused by aerosol cans. Okay, let's not use aerosol cans then. So we switched it up. Magically, I believe that the hole got smaller. They predict these things in computer programs and formulas that they can enter whatever number they want. And if a scientist says, hey, I don't think this is right, they immediately jump on and say, well, the science is settled. I don't think I've ever heard a scientist ever say that the science was settled. I don't think a scientist has ever said that. In fact, I believe there's people out there that don't think that that gravity is the way that it was, you know, what goes up must come down. They think it's something else. Okay. Scientists don't belittle those people. Well, 99.9% of the climate scientists say that this is real. No, they don't. No, they don't. Bill Nye, what a great engineer. He's not a scientist, though. He's an engineer. I mean, he in his video the other day, he talked about, are any of these free? Well, no, but everything that he had there was an option that's already invented. It wasn't a give me, he had a blanket, a thing of sand, and a fire extinguisher there. And all these things are things that are already invented to stop fires. He didn't have to say, you need to give me money and I'll figure out how to put this out. And again, it's a fire that he created. Is it settled? We don't know. But I do know that it's a way for the Democrats to try and grab a bunch of money. And they will. Again, a $92 trillion price tag, only $80 trillion in the world. Everybody should give us money. It's no wonder they love the Paris Climate Accord. It's the easiest way to take everybody's money is to get everybody together. It's absolutely ridiculous. And if people would pay attention, again, you have the, you know, top 100 most polluted cities in 2018. There's not a single an American city on this entire list. I see a bunch of Indias. I see a bunch of China. Wouldn't the best thing for them to do would be, if they really care about this, go to India and China and give them the technology needed to make their factories cleaner. Give them the smoke scrubbers. Give them all this stuff. But instead, what do? It's America's fault. It's America that did this. It's America that needs to pay for this. How long are you going to take it? How long are you going to let them keep reaching into your pocket to do nothing for you? I mean, it's your call. But for me, I'm done with it already.
Infowars.com/show.
Welcome back to the War Room. We've been going over a little bit of how the Democrats love to sell you a false idea in order to take something from you. We've gone from health care. We just talked about the Green New Deal, which, you know, as somebody that hunts, the environment is something that actually does matter to me. But it's not going to be done by me just giving all my money away
put out an actual idea that can work, not something that costs, you know, $12 trillion more than what the whole world has just to fix it here, which is, you know, like we said, doesn't even have one city in the top 100 of most polluted cities in the world. Not one city. You have people that say, oh, L.A. is, you know, smoggy and everything like that. Okay. But that doesn't even break the top 100. It doesn't even break the top 100. In fact, your top, let's see. Oh, there's one. 17 is banging. 19 of your top 50? Top 50 most polluted cities in the world are either in India or China. And one's in Bangladesh. I mean, these are all things that they try and sell you, and they try and get you to think that these are great ideas, but they're not actually telling you the whole story. They're telling you what they want you to hear and what they think you want to hear. And for me, that's dangerous. That's what puts us in the situation that we're in. Because we can't argue with them, or because our voices here at InfoWars have been silenced and we're no longer allowed to put out a video like these videos here. What, you know, 2 years ago, these videos would have been put out on YouTube. They would have been put out on Twitter, all these things. And somebody could have seen it. And by all means, you know, look at what I say. Take it with a grain of salt. But go look at it. Go look at the information that's out there. When you shut down people's voices and you only hear one side, it's really easy for that side to tell you what is, this is, these are the ways. It's no different than a parent, you know, telling their kids that dragons used to exist or something. If you only have one side of the story, you're never going to know. And that's the dangerous thing. Only having one voice is not a world that I want to live in. Let's go into another thing that they like to talk about. The cost of living. The cost of living is a big thing. They tell you that, Kamala Harris wants to give you a couple thousand dollars every month to help you pay your rent. Well, these economic geniuses are so good at economics that they don't understand that if everybody knows that you have an extra $2,000, guess what happened? Well, I'm gonna put an extra $2,000 on rent. Now, I actually think that the housing thing, it boils down to something different. It boils down to a major issue that the people have, that we have here in the country. It boils down to schools. I believe I saw somewhere in World War I, where America kind of became a superpower and started to take off. The average grade that the average American had finished was only the eighth grade. That means by the eighth grade, everybody was ready to go out and join the world. And they did. And so somehow we now have it to where kids get all the way through high school, and then they go into college, which is another complete lie told by the Democrats. Sold by the Democrats, and then they've started doing that with things like schooling. So I believe the huge cost of living, mainly for housing and stuff, is directly related to the property taxes that they always try and put on here in Austin, just locally. We had them to where they were going to limit up to like 3.5%, and they couldn't go higher than that without getting the approval of the citizens in order to go higher than that for the property taxes. Well, Austin immediately started arguing and saying that, you know, well, if we don't have this money for property taxes, we're going to have to cut policing. We're going to have to cut, the city will be less safe. Why? Why not cut out something else that might not be necessary? Why not? I mean, I enjoy the arts as much as the next guy, but I'm sorry, but if it comes down to police or funding an art school, I'm going to have to go police on that one. If it comes down to providing an education for the kids, or rebuilding, you know, 10 new homeless shelters or something, I think I'm going to have to go with the kids. I mean, let's prioritize what we want. They don't prioritize. Everything, well, again, Ocasio-Cortez said it best. Well, you just pay for it. You just pay for it. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter where the money comes from. It doesn't matter how much it costs. You just pay for it. And we wonder why people are living paycheck to paycheck. If you cut the property taxes, people's rent might actually go down. You know, because I assume most of my rent every month goes for property taxes. Isn't that a thought? Is anybody bringing this up? Are they trying to tell this? Is it that Republicans have the worst way to get their voice out? Well, I used to think that. I used to think that the Republicans were just really bad at branding stuff and getting their ideas out there and showing the world that, hey, this is what our idea actually means. And then I started working here. And I noticed that, wait a minute. Why can CNN or the Young Turks or MSNBC for 2 years put out a Russia story or anything like that and spin it whatever way they wanted? Trump was at a prostitute party with Putin. They were just partying together. They did a bunch of lines of coke and everything. Why could they put out stories like that? But we couldn't even put out a story that put out something in light of, hey, this is our point of view. This is our side of the story. No. When I started working here, I realized that censorship is probably the worst thing you could ever do, and that the Republicans don't get their side out about what their bills do or can do. It might partially be the branding that they have. It might partially be that they're terrible at getting the idea out there. But I think it's more that they don't tell you that side. They just say that person's racist. I'm sure they put my Twitter up numerous times, and I went from having my mom follow me to now I probably have a bunch of hate mail and everything and telling me that I am the worst person. I am racist. I am evil. Well, I'm not. I have a, you know, they tell my 12-year-old son who nothing but enjoys people, loves people. The way they talk about white men, what chance does he have? He doesn't have one, because they're going to tell him over and over that he's the cause of every problem. And eventually, it won't be my son, because at least I'm there to teach him that, you know, hey, right and wrong, that's just an idea that people have. You let it go. Doesn't matter. But what about the kid that doesn't have his dad there, that doesn't have somebody telling him right and wrong? What's that kid going to think? What's that kid going to do? Guns, you know, guns are the same way. If you have somebody that's there to teach you how to safely use a gun, the right way to use a gun, how to, you know, be respectful of it, that kid's never going to go do anything terrible. He just won't. Because he's been raised his whole life that, hey, these are instruments that can really hurt you. You don't want to do that. But we need to at least cling to the rights that were given to us. Free speech, right to bear arms. Those should be the two easiest things in the history of things to do. Like I said earlier, we're supported by people, the listeners of this show. We're supported by people. We're supported by people that agree with us. If you could, please go to InfoWarsStore.com, pick up a t-shirt, pick up the Ultra 12. I've tried the Ultra 12 earlier today. It was fantastic. Pick up the Turbo Force. The Turbo Force is something that I use all the time. I love the Turbo Force. The Turbo Force is really, really good. The protein bars are fantastic. They're the best I've ever had. InfoWarsStore.com. InfoWars.com/show.
fight.
This photo was tweeted by a reporter for Fusion showing two alleged alt-right members doing the OK symbol at the White House. Now, she also tweeted this, a link to an Anti-Defamation League article, and a photo showing how the symbol is tied to white power.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
See the forbidden news at InfoWars.com. We need your support more than ever, so go to InfoWarsStore.com. Get the best products that you need and help keep our reporters on the front lines in the fight for freedom.
When you don't have a bunch of KKK running around or real people saying the N-word, you've got to have folks like Jesse Smollett go out and stage it. And when they get caught, well, you've got to go ahead and cover up for him, because actually he's a hero who is out there turning everybody into victims and continuing the racial division.
I'm pissed off.
What is it that has you so angry? Is it the attackers?
It's the attackers, but it's also the attacks.
You've got to intensify culture war. Men against women, women against men, gay against straight, black against white, Hispanic against black, on and on and on. And so you've got to create what you call dog whistles. If I don't want the IMF and World Bank running my life, if I don't want the TPP unelected running my life, if I don't want all these big multinational agreements like the Trans-Pacific Partnership that was set up a decade before by Hillary, she brags that she helped write much of it. If I don't want to be ruled by multinational secretive boards based in Singapore, why, that's dog whistle for anti-Semitism.
Facebook told me that the process they use is to engage a number of factors. Have they promoted hate speech on Facebook? Have they been banned for violating the rules in the past? Have they self-described themselves as part of a hate movement or hate ideology? Those are the factors that Facebook was weighing. And I checked in also to see if these people would be banned from WhatsApp, which is also owned by Facebook. Mm-hmm. And a spokesperson cannot say immediately because it's, I guess, unclear whether some of these people have WhatsApp accounts, according to the spokesperson.
Nigel Farage comes on the show routinely, founder of UKIP, now the head of the Brexit party that's sweeping Europe. They've got London Guardian articles, Associated Press articles. Is he a white supremacist for coming on the white supremacist show, Alex Jones? Lies within lies within lies. They will oppress you. So when they give you the false definition, they then, as tyrants, use that to then oppress and control you. But they're going to have to be sued. They're going to have to be criminally charged, because this is an organized racketeering operation by Hope Not Hate in the UK. That's the Southern Poverty Law Center group over there. The SPLC here and others, where they are organizing and manipulating and knowingly lying about people to then create a banking and travel designation in the national security apparatus to literally deny you the ability to travel and live your life.
You may have seen some claims on social media lately that the OK sign is a hate symbol used to say white power. Well, tonight we are verifying for you, taking a closer look at photos and claims that it is well known and being used in the White House.
Sources in this case are pretty easy. First, the initial claims made on social media and the Anti-Defamation League. So where does this even come from? Well, last week, this photo was tweeted by a reporter for Fusion showing two alleged alt-right members doing the OK symbol at the White House. Now, she also tweeted this, a link to an Anti-Defamation League article, and a photo showing how the symbol is tied to white power.
And you say the OK sign that everybody associates with, do you have enough oxygen in your tanks when you're diving? Yes. Or SWAT teams. Everything good? Yes. It's the international OK symbol. They take it. Hillary comes out and calls it white supremacists. And then everyone makes a joke out of it on 4chan. And then suddenly all the followers that buy into all this really believe they've seen this. Then jokers start getting involved in it. And we're off to the races. So here's the headline. Total BS. MLB team bans fan for life after flashing white power hand sign. And on the news,
Welcome back to the War Room. This is Scott Bronson. We've done 2 hours already, and I feel like they've gone pretty well. We're going to open up the phone lines now. 888-201-2244. 888-201-2244. Open up the phone lines, and you guys can talk about whatever you want to talk about. I'll come up with an opinion on everything. Unless I really don't care, then I'll hang up on you. But no, I won't do that. But just call in, talk about anything you want, and we will continue the conversation. Again, 888-201-2244. Now, earlier today, I believe Bill de Blasio launched his 2020 presidential campaign. This is kind of funny because I also saw a poll where it said 76% of New Yorkers wouldn't vote for de Blasio for president, which makes a lot of sense because he, he's kind of ruined the city. A lot of people don't like the direction the city has gone. You have, and it's not just him. I mean, you have people like AOC who somehow thinks that a government subsidy is just the government giving money to a company. She's an economics major too, by the way. You figure that one out. Boston University might want to double check that program. But he joins the list of roughly 22 Democrats now. And, I mean, these include such heavy hitters as Joe Biden, who's been in Congress for, I don't know, 30 years and has never done anything. Cory Booker, old Spartacus himself. Pete Buttigieg, I don't even know how to say it. I think it's Buttigieg, or something like that. Buttigieg, he's running. Apparently, he has a contentious relationship with the vice president, but yet they were friends a few years back. And I believe that you can actually find Mike Pence, you know, coming out and saying how good of a guy Pete is and things like that. You have somebody by the name of Callahan O'Hare. I don't even know who that is. Julian Castro. He's mayor of San Antonio, Julian Castro. You have John Delaney. Tulsi Gabbard. I actually watched the Joe Rogan with Tulsi Gabbard the other day. She says a lot of stuff that I agree with. And then she also says a lot of stuff that she's no different than the other ones. And the scary part about this is one, yeah, they're going to do like the Republicans did, and their candidate's going to come out of this big pile, and they'll be better off for it, but they're also going to be going up against Donald Trump. But the scary part is that for me, and I mentioned this earlier, is that we're roughly, it feels like we're always one election away from losing the life that we've all worked for, from going, you know, one election away from going from the tax rates that we have now and the tax cuts that we got, which was for the first time in my entire life, the government actually put money back into my pocket. We're going to go from that to all of it being gone. Paying 70% tax, 50% tax. I have health care right now. I like my health care. Alex provides health care for his employees. I like it. If you take it and all of a sudden now you do the whole, well, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. Well, every time they change something, it affects me. The Affordable Care Act, I actually had the company I worked for previously, I actually had healthcare through them until the day the Affordable Care Act passed. And then I got a note saying that they were no longer providing healthcare. And then I looked at the healthcare that I could get to get the exact same thing that I was paying about $160 a month for. To get the exact same thing, it was going to cost me $600. Well, what do you think I did? I'll just pay the fine at the end of the year. Let's see. $600, that's, you know, $7,200 a year, or I could just pay $600 at the end. Well, I just won't get sick. or I won't break a bone, or if I do, I'll just have to deal with that then. Again, I feel like the whole, everything that I like and I enjoy about living here is one election away from being stolen from me. You know, guns is a big one. I think people should have guns. Gun control. Look, there's two things that you believe. In this issue, you either believe people can have guns or you don't. If you believe, I believe they should have guns. If they want to own a tank, okay, go for it. The other side, they don't. They're always fighting for the don't. They need to get to the don't. They don't have guns. Or free speech. The callers that are lining up right now, I feel that they can say whatever they want when they come on here, other than swear. If you swear, that's a problem. But they can say whatever they want when they come on. That's free speech. You either believe people can say what they want or you don't. There's nothing they're going to say when we start bringing them on. There's nothing that they're going to say that is going to hurt me. There's nothing they're going to say that I'd walk away crying about. They're going to say whatever they want to say. So again, like guns, you either think people can have guns or you don't. You either believe people can say what they want or you don't. If you're in the don't camp, okay. But stop lying and saying that, well, these are regulations that are needed to make a better society. No society comes out of silencing people. No society comes out of disarming people. No good society comes from those things. And if you believe that they do, you're in the wrong country. Look at the taxes that we have. Me and Harrison talk all the time, and I've told Harrison many times, if the founding fathers somehow teleported to today, they would revolt again. They revolted over a simple tax on tea. They said, no, I'm not paying it. And they revolted. Now think about how much we get taxed. Look at how much money our government gets. And it's never enough. It's never enough. They'll treat gun control and speech control the same way. You'll figure out a way to skirt the system. You'll figure out a way to play by their rules. And when it doesn't fit up to what they want, they'll change it again. They'll change it again. Hundreds of years this country went without any sort of comprehensive gun control. Hundreds of years. What changed when kids started shooting up schools? It's not the gun that changed. The gun is pretty much the same as it was now. It's not speech that changed. Speech is pretty much the same as it's always been. You say what you want, and you stand behind what you say. Everybody likes to say, well, you can't go into a crowded theater and say, fire. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. But there are, if that crowd gets up and tramples somebody and kills somebody, there are repercussions for that. But you can say it. There's nobody that says you can't. You don't walk into a theater and it says, hey, don't say fire. No. So speech and guns, you either believe that people can have it or you don't. Stop lying to people. Your Twitters, your YouTubes, your Facebooks, they lie to people. We need to make this better for people. You want to make it better for people? Put Alex Jones back on them. Let Alex talk. A lot of people for a lot of years have enjoyed Alex Jones talking. And because you don't like what he has to say, you decide you can't say it. We'll be right back.
The War Room. Infowars.com/show.
I won't back down. No, I won't back down. You can stand me up at the gates of hell, but I won't back down.
All right, let's go to, welcome back to War Room. Let's go to some phone calls here. We have Kaylor in South Carolina. And I'll keep this
world from dragging. Hey, guys, how's it going? First time caller.
First time host.
All right. First off, I want to say God bless you guys. God bless the InfoWar. And America, do not back down. That's first and foremost. Second of all, I'd like to talk about AI and the seriousness that that's coming with AI. I think Alex said in February that they actually turned on the AI systems. And I think if we don't act now, that it'll be too late. I believe we all need to demand a debate about AI. We also need to demand a vote about AI. And for goodness sakes, make sure it's a written ballot.
Well, they already did. They already do have AI out there. And part of the problem with it is they have the AI that when something gets posted we'll take Facebook. When something gets posted that has Alex Jones in it, they have an AI that looks for that and they pull it down right away. That tells me for a platform like Facebook, it's already too late. We're already beyond the point. If they have something to where if a picture of Alex is up and it can be pulled down, yeah, that's a scary place to be. And the fact that we keep relying more and more on AI to be a police force is even scarier for me because robots don't understand a joke. Robots don't understand context. There's a bunch of stuff that goes into it that if we allow machines to do it, it's just not there. You can't have, you know, there's sometimes AI can put out like a funny little script. You know, they take the AOC and they put out a press statement by AOC designed by AI. And sometimes it's funny, but most times it's incoherent. It doesn't make sense. So Kaylor, I do agree that I think this is something that is very, that is something that will be a problem. Do you see any sort of, do you have any ideas for what we could do about it?
We need to bring it into the light. I mean, at all costs, you know, I believe if 50% of all the info warriors, you know, called the national switchboard, I believe we could probably make something happen. You know, it takes people getting up and doing something, you know?
Well, that would require that your the elected so-called leaders, would actually have to come out and be leaders. A leader doesn't do something because it's going to make him the most well-liked or that he understands that he's going to have to ask people to do some things that they won't like. It's hard to be – we'll take the military. It's hard to be a leader in the military if you want everybody to like you because you're never going to be able to ask them to do what might not be most beneficial for them but might benefit the group overall. So you have a bunch of people now that are talking about censorship and the problems of these companies that are using AI to censor various people off of their platforms, but they're just talking about it and they're just skirting around it. There's very few that have actually come out and come forward as being champions of censorship. I know Alex the last couple of days has been pretty high on the senator from Missouri. I forget his name, but I know he's been very high on him. I'm sorry, what? Oh, Senator Hawley. Yes, thank you, Derek. Very high on Senator Hawley, and Hawley seems to be coming out with a plan to do something about the censorship. And he's one of the first people to actually step up and lead on this. And that's what you need. You need leaders to be leaders. And the problem is that there's not many people in politics right now that I look to as leaders.
We need InfoWars to go and run for office.
And your best bet would be Owen. He's pretty good at that stuff. I would vote for Owen. So well, thank you for the call, Kaylor. Let's go over to Nick from Michigan.
Hey, thank you for taking my phone call. I just want to say thank you to everyone in the back and to what you guys are doing, what you guys put in every day. I take official oil from you guys and Survival Shield as well. A phone call. If I could point something out before my original topic, I was going to say, Alex, a few weeks ago, point out on YouTube how when you search in his name and then you put in the upload date to try to find like newer videos, that it wouldn't do that. I'd say like a week or so after he put that out on air that they changed it, they reverted it back. So now that you go on YouTube, you can find new videos of Alex. I just thought it was interesting that after he brought it up on air that YouTube went out of their way to go and reverse their algorithm back. But my topic was going to be about Donald Trump, specifically on 5G and geoengineering. I think he's done a great job, obviously, for everything that he's put in the last few years here. Just, I mean, I don't know if I can even give him my vote necessarily. I want to vote for him in the next election, but I don't know that I can vote for him if he's not going to be willing to stop the geoengineering, which seems to have gotten worse, chemtrailing, and then the 5G, which he's supporting almost, the 5G cell technology. Just wondering what you thought about that, those 2 points specifically.
There's a lot of things. I'm in agreement with you. There's a lot of things that I really like what Trump does. There's a lot of things that I'm very supportive of. But there's a few things that I wish he'd be a little bit better about. You know, the 5G, the geoengineering stuff. That's all stuff that I wish he would be a little bit – take a better stance on.
Yeah, I don't know. 5G specifically, you've seen that he supported it. I mean, he almost looked at it as a technology that would do good.
Yeah,
you know, I think if he had the right people in his ear, he'd think differently. But obviously, that's a problem in and of itself.
I think the biggest thing about him supporting, one, he probably hasn't looked into it as much as somebody like a David Knight or Alex Jones has, or Owen, and. He probably just doesn't know. And like most people, new technology is always, well, why not? Why not? Why not new technology? And I agree with you that him supporting the 5G isn't the greatest news to hear. It does rival all the good things that I think he does. It kind of balances out a little bit, because if everybody is hit with that, with the 5G, and it even does half of what they're worried it might, we're looking at a world of hurt.
Yeah, thanks again for taking my call.
Thank you so much, Nick. You have a great day. We're about to head to break here. I'd just like to once again tell everybody that to go to InfoWarsStore.com. There's something there for everybody. I know there's something there for everybody because my mom tells me that she found something and she doesn't shop online. There's something there for everybody. If everybody wears a shirt, if you don't take supplements or anything like that, everybody wears shirts, and there's a lot of great shirts and great shirt designs at InfoWarsStore.com. Please go check it out and help support. If you support InfoWars, help support us through the store.
Infowars.com/show.
This is The War Room with Owen Schroyer. Watch the live stream at Infowars.com/show.
And welcome back to The War Room. I'm Scott Bronson, sitting in for Owen Schroyer today. We're taking your phone calls right now if you want to get in. I believe I saw a few open lines. 888-201-2244. That's 888-201-2244. Come on in. Talk about anything you want. I will try to do my best to be as good as Owen is at knowing a vast majority of different things. And like I said, any topic that you want. 888-201-2244. Let's go back to the phones. Let's talk to Jefferson in Virginia. He disagrees with me.
Hey, Scott. Yeah, I was listening earlier and you were speaking with Harrison, and you said that California should be able to pass laws on gun control that make you leave the state if you own guns. And I think that's the wrong attitude. States shouldn't be able to rewrite the Constitution with impunity. There should be some sort of a check challenge that immediately in the Supreme Court, and there should be penalties paid by states that do that.
Well, that's not exactly what I said. I didn't think that you should be forced to leave the state. I said that if California passed a law like that, as a citizen of the country, I would leave the state.
Right,
I would leave
that
state.
They're chasing you around the country by passing unconstitutional laws and chasing you out of where you have every right to still live under constitutional law. The Electoral College thing that they're doing where the states are passing the popular vote option on is rewriting the Constitution. These things should be challenged immediately and go to the Supreme Court and be ruled unconstitutional. States can be experimental up to a point, but they shouldn't be able to rewrite constitutional law.
I do not disagree with what you're saying. All I was pointing out is that if these are the laws that they want to pass, let them pass. And then, yes, I agree with you 100% that they should be challenged immediately in the Supreme Court. Again, like I said, you either believe that people can have guns or you don't. I'm in the camp that says people can have guns because I think guns do more good than they do harm. So I would agree with you. When they pass things that are adamant, that are directly against the Constitution, yes, that is something that we should, it should go right to the Supreme Court immediately. I agree with that.
The extra step I'm talking about is penalizing people for violating your constitutional rights. You have civil rights, you have constitutional rights. These people in legislative office shouldn't be able to do things like this that drag on for years of lawsuits. And then when it's resolved against them, there's no penalty they pay for having been wrong on constitutional law. We never go that extra step and say you violated the civil rights of everybody in your state when you passed that law.
I would agree with that. If you violate somebody's civil rights, I think that the state should be held accountable for it. If it does go to the Supreme Court and then the Supreme Court says, hey, you're violating these people's rights, they should be forced to pay for it. The magazine ban in New Jersey, I believe that's a direct violation of what the Constitution says, and that anybody that's penalized under that law, New Jersey should have to pay them something.
Yeah, I agree. But we just never get to that point where people recognize that these people they're actually up to no good. It's deliberate, and they figure they're going to get away with it for 5 years of arguing about it in lower courts and appellate court, and it finally gets to SCOTUS. And in the meantime, we Americans get jerked around by our own governments.
Well, and part of the problem, I think part of the problem with that is that they're the ones that control the narrative that people hear. The CDC under Obama did a bunch of gun control stuff, and they found out that guns save way more lives than they take. They squash that. They try and hide that. You can look into the last study done on gun violence, and it is adamant. It was hidden. Obama told them to do the study. They found out that they save upwards of 300,000 lives a year, and all of a sudden nobody wants to talk about that. I think that they do the same thing with all of this stuff. Anytime they step on your rights, they do a very good job of tying somebody up in the courts. And like I was telling Harrison earlier, it's because most of your richest people in the country and the world are very liberal. They fund liberal causes. That's a lot of money to tie people up in the court.
Mostly, yes. They're more leftist than they are actually liberal, but they like to say they're liberal.
Well, exactly. They have the money to where they have enough money that if the country goes completely to the left, they're still okay.
Exactly.
They won't be the ones in the breadlines. I appreciate your call, Jefferson. You have a great day. Let's go to Thomas in Texas.
A lot of people in this country are pro gun, but they're not pro Second Amendment. A lot of Republicans in this country, they might be pro gun, but they are not pro Second Amendment. The NRA, they may have used to be pro-gun, but they are not pro-Second Amendment. And that's what I'll tie into the last thing this guy said, because, I mean, that's the key of the issue. That's why we're having a whole lot of problems. A lot of people think they're pro-Second Amendment. They're only pro-gun. They don't take it to the fullest interpretation of it. And they cowtow around and be like, oh, yeah, well, gun permits, that seems reasonable. We should do background checks, you know. Oh, yeah, having a license to sell firearms, you know. The same people that fail to realize that originally in this country, income tax was ruled to be involuntary servitude, just that whole crowd, you know?
I will say I will say, Thomas, that I agree with you on the NRA. I've joined the NRA many years ago. I've been a member. I've paid my dues every time they come up. Usually I get the three-year one. I'm not so sure I'm going to do that this next time. I seem to get a lot of mail from them just asking me for more money, and I don't see a lot of results on it. And then last thing that they did was with the bump stocks, where they were like, yeah, I guess we support that. Well, where does it stop? Where does it stop? So I agree with you on that.
They're the ones who basically wrote the 10-year assault weapon ban, you know, that got signed in under a Bill Clinton. And if it hadn't had a sunset, you know, thing in there, it would still be in. And, you know, that would be that. But, you know, the only organization out there I see right now that is actually really pro-Second Amendment and not just pro-gun is Gun Owners of America. And every patriot out there should already be signed up for that. Anyways, I just wanted to throw in a quick tidbit here, because this has been bothering me for a while that, you know, and rightly so, we're always criticizing Islam for female genital mutilation, but rarely ever do I hear it talked about while they're over there, you know, mutilating the genitals of all the girls over there, which is extremely wrong. You know, here in the U.S., 70% of males are mutilated through the act of circumcision, and, you know, I don't think that's right.
Yeah, I've heard that argument before. As somebody that, you know, I myself am part of that 70%, I guess it's never really bothered me, never really affected my life. I still have all the good parts that come with it. Whereas on the other side, they actually lose the feeling and the desire. I think that's the difference. That's the separation, at least in my mind, for me.
You know, a lot of people see different sides of the argument. I'm part of that 70% also. But, you know, a lot of women over in the Middle East are of the same opinion you are, where, you know, they've never seen it from the other side. They don't know much about it. You know, there's a lot of mental blockage to it. You know, it's people don't want to accept that they've had that level of trauma done to them, you know, and what that would come along with and what the implications of it would be, what the implications towards their parents and doctors might be. You know, it would make sense.
I also believe that the age of when they do the female genital mutilation is different than when they do a circumcision here, maybe, or a circumcision throughout the world. I believe a circumcision is supposed to be done within the first 7 days of a baby being born, and there's a difference there, or grabbing a, you know, 8-year-old girl and forcing her to go through that.
You know, we give babies here in the U.S. vaccines which permanently fry their brains when they're babies. Does that make it okay? Would it be less okay if we did it when they're 8 years old? I mean, come on.
Well, no. I'm not against the point you're trying to make. I just, it's not something that I put a lot of time and thought into. So, I mean, it gives me something to look into, but I think there's a vast difference. There's a bigger difference between it than what you're acknowledging at the moment. Thank you for your call, Thomas, and we will be back in about 2 minutes, 3 minutes.
The War Room. Infowars.com/show.
Intense being on this side of the Stranger Things InfoWars intro here. Scott Bronson filling in for Owen Troyer. Owen is back tomorrow. We are taking calls at the moment. Let's go right to Brian.
Yeah, hi, Scott. Thanks for taking my call. One thing I'd like to say about InfoWars is great. All the products are great. I have X2, Brain Force, and Turbo Force all on auto ship. All the products are amazing. Thank you so much for everything.
You're a great American, as Alex Jones would say.
All I'd like to say is I didn't listen to you 3 years ago. I got turned on to you after the Vegas shooting, after Parkland. And I just think that the root cause of the gun control issue is the mental health issue. And if they take care of the mental health issue, I think a lot of the gun mass shootings, they don't all go away, but it greatly reduces the probability of it.
Well, I would say that I agree with that. If you look at it, the amount of guns hasn't increased. There's still pretty much the same amount of ownership, maybe even a little less percentage of ownership. And somehow the shootings became very prominent. I believe right after kind of Columbine, when they did that, that's kind of when shootings became something that was more prominent in American life. Even though they are still not as prominent as the left wants to make you feel. If you go to the places, you know, every town for gun safety or whatever, they use instances of a BB gun being shot as gun violence. Well, if we're going to take BB gun violence, I know my dad and his brothers probably shot each other constantly with BB guns as kids. So, I mean, add those to the past instances of gun violence. It's not an issue, like you said, it's not an issue of guns. It's probably an issue of a lot of stuff Alex talks about where people are being drugged. People are being drugged. Rather than trying to figure out why you feel a certain way, just take this pill so you don't feel that way. That right. doesn't solve anything. That's actually a really dangerous game to go into because now you're just doing the old, you're suppressing something. Well, why not try and figure out why you feel a certain way before you change the way you feel? If you don't know why you're doing something, how do you know how to fix it? Anything else, Brian?
Well, I guess my thing is, like, I've never been an advocate for guns. I don't own a gun, but I stand pretty firmly with if you see a bad guy with a gun and you have a gun and you're a good guy with a gun, chances are you're going to do the right thing.
I agree with that 100%.
I actually watched the NRA ad the other day with the guy that stopped the church shooter down in Texas talking about how the guy had shot at him a couple of times and he missed and he was a good guy with a gun. And I think that if you're truly an American and you see somebody trying to harm people, that you're going to do the right thing.
You know, I agree with that. I agree with that 100%. And it reminds me of this thing I read actually earlier today. I wish I would have printed it out. But they asked a French soldier what the difference between American soldiers was and other soldiers. And one of the things he said in there is American soldiers, if they answer your call for help over the radio, they go to the trouble. And they don't ask questions, they just go to the trouble. And I feel that's an encompassment of what the good people in America do. We don't shy from trouble, we turn and go to the trouble to see if we can help. And I think we've shown that throughout our entire history that if there's trouble, we will try and go help. Fairly recently, sometimes we cause the trouble to make it seem like we're going to help. But I think overall the American spirit is that if there's trouble, we're going to be the first ones there, and we're going to get it figured out. I appreciate your call, Brian. Let's go to Adam in Ottawa.
Hello? Hello?
Hey, Adam. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry, Scott. Hey, yeah. I wanted to talk about the very specific nature of the left psychosis because you guys have been running lots of pieces on Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which is hilarious. And they were talking about it, Alex, on Alex today. And I've been wanting to call in, even though I call in probably too much. But look, this is what's going on because I grew up in a prominent family up here, and I know this psychosis inside out, and I know what communists they really are. So what it is basically is if you believe that your DNA determines who you are, you know, the flesh informs the soul and not the other way around, then you are in a state of psychosis, the clinical psychosis that you believe that something else is controlling you. So what's happening is when something triggers them, they think their brain has decided to get angry, and therefore you see them going off. They are having a psychotic break. And I'm reporting from the inside of this. I unwound this in myself about 15 years ago, just with an understanding of the Bible and what they were talking about from a clinical sense in terms of God and in a secular sense, you know, and I saw the power of that idea that the soul informs the flesh, your consciousness creates your body and not the other way around. It is a clinical psychosis.
I can't disagree with you. There was only one type of people growing up that my father said that you should never associate with, and it's liars. And if you've been watching the whole show today, I feel like the left, the way they are right now, is just full of liars. And I think they're trying to sell people on what they see and it's a corrupt vision. So I don't, it is psychosis, and I don't disagree with you. Is there a way to get them out of this psychosis? Obviously you were there, you were in it. You came out of it. How do we get more of them to turn away like you did?
I'm not sure, because when you start to unravel it, you know, and of course these psych drugs that they're putting on people, if you understand the basic pharmacology of any addiction, you start adding a substance into the brain that you're finding there, the brain stops producing it. As soon as you take the drugs away, the external source, you know, you're in withdrawal. So who knows what's going on in the brains of these so-called, you know, psychiatric patients and stuff.
Adam, you actually brought up a really good point there, addiction. I would say that their addiction is victimhood. How do you get people to believe that they're not a victim? Everything that happens is because it just happened. There's no self-accountability among them. There's nothing that, you know, hey, I made the wrong choice. I did the wrong thing. There's none of that with them. It's just, well, this happened because somebody else did this.
I'd say
their addiction is victimhood.
I agree. That's a big part of it, you know. But, you know, I remember a friend of mine who I knew back in Toronto, and she had a lot of problems in her life and went through the system so many times. But she said, you know, it's never, why do they always want it to be one thing? It has to be one thing so they can focus in on that and be the expert on solving that. It's never one thing. It's everything. It's 10 different things that are screwing me up, you know? And I think that that's what's going on with the left people. It's not just, yeah, it's the victimhood. Yeah, it's the idea that their biology. You see, they think that their biology determines what they are, and it's going to inform them. So they're manifesting all of these messages from their own biology when, of course, your control is inherent. You're in total control. You're manifesting the experience 100%. But because they think that the experience is manifesting itself, they are in a psychosis where they're manifesting this experience that they think is happening to them when they're the ones actually doing it. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. I think I followed what you were saying. Adam, we're show's about to end here, so I'd like to thank you for your call, and I appreciate you tuning in today. To wrap things up here, I've said it numerous times today, please go to InfoWarsStore.com. Please support the programs you see here. Support the people that you see here. If you agree with them on anything, go buy a $9.99 shirt. Go buy a $15 shirt. Find something in the store that you want to try, that you like, and give it a try. I recommend the Turbo Force. The Turbo Force is fantastic. I will stand behind that. And I recommend the protein bars. I will stand behind the protein bars. They are the best protein bars that I've ever tasted. Go to InfoWarsStore.com, and thank you so much for tuning into the War Room.